Welcome to Engineering Innovations, the official podcast of Purdue University's Elmore Family School of Electrical and Computer Engineering. I'm Kristen Malavenda, and in each episode, we explore the ideas, technologies, and people shaping the future of ECE at Purdue and beyond. Today, we're doing a little different, though. We're bringing you a State of the School episode, and I'm joined by Dr. Marilyn Kilcarney. He's the Michael and Catherine Burke Head and also a professor of Purdue ECE. We'll look back at the highlights of the past academic year, talk about some exciting developments underway, and get a glimpse into what's ahead for the school in research, education, and innovation. So whether you're a current student, an alum, faculty or staff, or someone curious about what's happening at Purdue ECE, one of the top ECE programs in the country, this conversation is for you. So, Milan, thanks so much for joining me.
It's great to be here.
It was another exciting year. A lot of things happened. What are a few of the accomplishments that just stand out to you?
No, that's a great question. You know, President Chang has this watchword, excellence at scale, right? It's what we think about at Purdue. We want to be excellent while also fulfilling the land-grant mission of providing a quality education and quality research to as many people as possible. And I think this last year in ECE really exemplified that, and going forward, we'll continue to exemplify that. We are the largest we've ever been, more students than ever before, both at the undergraduate level and the graduate level. And in fact, this coming year, we're getting ready to welcome our largest class of incoming sophomores ever by several hundred. So scale is there.
Yep.
We just graduated, I think, our largest class ever, including our very first class of graduating students from Indianapolis, which is really exciting.
Yep.
So that's been a really big change for us. We are no longer one big department in just West Lafayette. We're now one big department in West Lafayette and Indianapolis.
So we've got the urban and the suburban locations.
Right. So we have kind of the classic college, college town atmosphere, as well as an urban campus for people that want that experience. And so we've spent a lot of the last year really making that come true. Right, thinking about how we can build up our programs in Indy, how we can teach the kinds of classes we want to teach in Indy, provide the kinds of experiences that we want in Indy. As a small example of that, we've had the Spark Challenge for many, many years here at West Lafayette. It's our actually semi-annual design competition, design showcase for students. People present their senior design projects or even just things they do in their spare time.
Right.
And every semester here in West Lafayette, people have been doing this. And this spring, we had our very first Spark Challenge down in Indianapolis as well. We had several amazing teams down there, really exemplifying how we're trying to be one department across two campuses. But scale is not the only thing that we're doing. We still remain excellent. We are still a top 10 department in both electrical engineering and computer engineering for the fourth year in a row. So it's kind of amazing that we can be as big as we've ever been.
Yep.
While still being as excellent as we are. And both that scale and that excellence are not just happening here in West Lafayette or in Indianapolis. They're happening around the world. Our online program, our online master's program, is the largest it's ever been.
Yeah, it's exploded.
Over 600 students are taking courses from us, in Chicago, in California, in India, in Africa. It's amazing. And our online master's program is now number one in the country. We're the best online ECE program out there while also being enormous.
Yes.
I think we really are living up to this notion of excellence at scale.
And when you go to, whether you do Purdue Online, Purdue West Lafayette, or Purdue in Indianapolis, you're getting a Purdue University degree. There's no distinction.
That's right. You're getting a Purdue University degree. Nowhere on your diploma does it say anything other than Purdue University. You get an online ECE degree with us. It's not some second-rate degree. Mm-hmm. It is the same courses being taught by the same faculty. You're taking those courses at the same time as on-campus students are taking them. You're working in groups with them. You're doing the same assignments as them, the same exams as them. It's the same quality. When you're taking a course in Indianapolis, you're taking it from our faculty. Mm-hmm. You're taking it with our curriculum, our exams, our assignments. It is the same experience. And we're bringing a lot of our experiences from West Lafayette down there, not just the Spark Challenge, but the ECE Student Society, Ada Kappa Nu, right? All of our amazing student groups up here are operating down in Indianapolis as well and providing that full Elmore Family School experience.
That's awesome. I know that as the year has gone on, it's felt more and more like there's a symbiotic relationship between West Lafayette and Indianapolis. Initially, we were all kind of like, what's happening? And now we're really kind of settling
into it. It's kind of amazing. You know, one of the things that we do in situations where we've got specialized classes, where maybe there's only one faculty member across the entire department that can teach a class, which is kind of a weird thing to say when you have 120 faculty members, but it does happen. We do what we call simulcast classes, where a professor will be in one location and presenting and giving their lecture. And there are students that are actually at the other location participating live.
Yep.
And we put in a bunch of technology to make that happen as seamlessly as possible. And one of the interesting things I thought about that is that when we first started telling people that we were going to do these simulcast classes, everybody's assumption was, oh, what that must mean is that you'll have professors in West Lafayette that are teaching in West Lafayette, and students in Indianapolis are going to get a second-rate experience.
Right, right.
They'll have to sit in a room and watch on a screen. But in reality, when we do our simulcast classes, we actually go in both directions.
Okay.
We have West Lafayette faculty members actually in Indianapolis, and the live class is happening in Indianapolis, and the students in West Lafayette are getting the simulcast version, because we really do view these as two locations for one department,
right?
Not two separate campuses.
And so we keep talking about how our student population keeps growing, but also our faculty population keeps growing. Talk about the new faculty we've hired and are continuing to hire.
Yeah, so this is an incredibly exciting time to be an ECE. There's so many advances coming that I'm sure we'll talk about throughout this podcast in semiconductors, in computing, in quantum, that are really research areas that ECE is at the forefront of. And as a reflection of that, we've been able to hire aggressively over the last 5 or 6
yeah.
years, but certainly last year and this year. And I'm really excited about a lot of the new blood that we've brought in as part of that hiring. Last year, we were able to hire 2 different people that work in quantum technology, yep. quantum networking. We were able to hire people that work in AI and ML, people that work in networking and robotics. It's really phenomenal, right? And we're hiring at all levels. We hired assistant professors, associate professors, full professors to really push things forward. And that hiring continued this year. Actually, we just finished closing our hiring season, and we were able to hire 4 new tenure track faculty.
Great.
Working in power systems, working in chip design, working in semiconductors, working in computer systems. And I think we're really kind of flooding the zone, if you will,
yeah.
across all of the different areas of emphasis that Purdue has under that Purdue Computes banner, right? Purdue says we want to be excellent in computing, in artificial intelligence,
yep.
in semiconductors, in quantum, and ECE is really driving that forward with these recent hires that we've had.
Absolutely.
I do also want to point out that we are not just hiring for research. We've also
right.
been really blessed to hire over the last few years several new professors of practice teaching faculty, people whose primary mission is to deliver extremely high-quality educational experiences, right? Design new programs, teach innovative classes. And so we've been able to hire multiple people in software engineering, multiple people in semiconductors. And so I'm really excited about the new learning experiences that we're going to be able to provide.
Yeah, you mentioned hiring season. It seems like the hiring season gets longer and longer and longer.
It does. It doesn't stop. We spend all of the spring semester interviewing because we want to be extremely selective.
Absolutely. Right?
We are one of the top departments in the country, and we are going to continue hiring only the very best people. And I'm so pleased about the folks that we've been able to hire.
We've got amazing faculty. Our students also, they just do incredible things. They do research. They do internships. They're undergrad TAs. Some have started their own businesses. And this year we had a special group that set the world record for, got to get it right, the fastest robot to solve a puzzle cube, which is essentially a Rubik's Cube.
Yeah.
So talk about... It's been really fun. Talk about the world record and then all some of the other accomplishments the students
yeah.
have had.
So this is incredible. And you're right. When they say puzzle cube, it's a Rubik's Cube.
Yeah.
But for copyright reasons, they can't call it that. This is a truly incredible story. And I think really exemplifies the kinds of students that we have here and the kinds of work that they do. So this is a group of 4 undergraduate students led by Matthew Petrohe. Matthew last summer had this idea for a senior design project. He said, I want to build a robot that can solve a Rubik's Cube, and I want to do it as fast as possible. Now, think about what this means, right? Solving a Rubik's Cube for a human is an incredibly challenging endeavor. It can
yeah.
take a lot of time. A lot of people have to think very hard about exactly what sequence of moves you have to do. Now, imagine that the very fastest human to solve a Rubik's Cube takes about 3 seconds.
Okay.
That's
amazing.
That alone
That's incredible.
Is incredible. A team of engineers at Mitsubishi Electric, right? Giant multinational Japanese corporation, an entire team of engineers got together and decided, okay, let's solve this using robots instead. So instead of a human hand turning all of the faces, you get 6 robotic arms that each grip a face and solve the cube. And rather than 3 seconds, when you do it with a robot, unsurprisingly, you can do it faster. They solved it in 0.3 seconds, so 10 times faster.
Right.
That's incredible. I want to once again emphasize, giant team of engineers at a giant multinational
right.
corporation.
Yes.
So Matthew and his team, Aiden Hurd, Junpei Ota, and Alex Hurd, said, we can do better. Alex Berta, not Alex yeah. Hurd. And they built this thing, and in one semester as a senior design project.
Yep.
They're taking a full slate of classes, and they're doing this as one class. Already got to the point where they could beat the world record.
Yes.
Right, a third of a second. And they said, you know what? Actually, I think we can do better. And so our school, the Elmore Family School, as well as the Institute for Control and Optimization of Networks, which is a college-wide research organization, got together and said, hey, if we give you some more resources, what can you do?
Right.
So we set them up in a lab. We gave them some additional resources. We helped them sort of with some of their algorithms. We their faculty advisor, Patrick Hyun, worked with them on some of the robotics and motion control. And 2 weeks ago, they were officially certified by Guinness as having the world record. And you ready for this number?
I'm ready.
It's not 300 milliseconds. 103 milliseconds.
Unbelievable.
Faster than a human blink.
That's crazy.
Right. Again, team of undergraduate students. Like, every time I tell this story, I like, my level of disbelief only grows.
Yes.
At what they were able to accomplish. And these are, they're just incredible students, right?
They are.
They know they can program, they can do, motion control for robotics, they can do open loop control, they can build, they built a custom cube in order to solve this as quickly as possible. And they're not, they're not people that kind of shy away from the camera,
right,
or can't communicate. They are incredibly talented and gifted communicators as well.
Absolutely.
Explaining what they do. And I said this in one of the videos, and I really mean it. If these are the kinds of students that we're training, and these are the kinds of students that we're sending out into the world, then our school is doing something right.
Absolutely. And I thought that was great, because the students aren't your stereotypical engineering students.
Not
they are just people telling you what they did.
Yeah.
But I see a lot of comments online that are like, yeah, so what? You solved a Rubik's Cube. Like, explain why the work that went into it is important and applies to other things.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, I'm not the best person to explain mm-hmm. this. I'm hopeful that actually maybe in another edition of this podcast, we can get Professor Hyun to
absolutely
come and talk a little bit about the real details and control and robotics that go into this. But imagine what's going on here. In order to solve a cube in 0.1 seconds, on average, it can take, I think, something like 15 to 20 turns
okay.
to solve a cube. From a given position, right? So say it takes 20 turns. You get 100 milliseconds to solve this, right? That includes the amount of time it takes to take a picture of the cube, figure out what the configuration of the cube is, figure out what path you need to take to solve the cube,
right,
and then execute it. So say you give yourselves 80 milliseconds for 20 turns. That's each turn has to be done in 4 milliseconds. That's starting the turn and stopping
right.
the turn
yeah.
without overshooting, because I don't know if you've ever tried to solve a Rubik's Cube quickly, but if you overshoot, the cube can actually lock up.
Yes.
And you can't turn it anymore.
Yes.
So you have to be incredibly precise.
Yes.
So the students actually went to Cole Morgan, which is a company that makes motors, and said, hey, we think we can do this. And the company was so impressed that they actually donated 6 of these motors to the students and the controllers. And the students had to go in and do extremely precise open loop control to start the moves at the right time, accelerate as quickly as possible, decelerate at the right time as quickly as possible, and then start the next turn. So again, you're just solving a Rubik's Cube.
Right.
What does that actually mean? It means you're doing incredibly precise control with incredibly fast acceleration and deceleration. These are the kinds of things that, in biology, and Patrick will tell you this, evolution has taken billions of years to create things like mantis shrimp that can move that quickly
right.
and that precisely. And these are a bunch of undergraduate students that figured out how to do this.
Yeah.
One of my favorite moments kind of exemplifying just how innovative the stuff they were doing is, we have a faculty member who actually recently bought one of these Cole Morgan motors and the motor controller. They just bought it. They were just figuring out how to set it up. And they came and saw this Rubik's Cube. And they were going and talking to the students saying, hey, can you guys actually come to my lab?
That's great.
And explain to me what you did and how you did this.
Yeah.
Because I think that this is going to be useful in my research.
That's awesome. I love that mutual
yeah.
learning experience. And actually, the world record team, they won Spark Challenge. Remember, we mentioned Spark. It's our biannual design competition. And they won it in, it was December of 2024.
They won the fall challenge. And then we didn't let them compete in the spring because, of course, if they competed in the spring, they
right.
would win again.
Right.
They did win our undergraduate design award.
Yes.
Unsurprisingly. So, yeah. One of the things we do is we give out awards to both undergraduate and graduates every year for research and for projects they do and for teaching. And, of course, this team won.
Yeah,
those awards.
So what kind of opportunities do undergrads in particular have for teaching and doing research and that kind of thing?
Yeah, so this is a great question. One of the things that we really pride ourselves on, again, excellence at scale is our watchword. And scale is the kind of thing that many people actually think of as a negative, right? Because, you know, we have over 2,000 undergraduate students. We have about 1,500 graduate students. And it might seem like it's really easy for a student to get lost.
Right.
And not feel like they can live up to their potential and get all the opportunities that they need. But one of the things that our school has been really good at over the years is finding ways of making that big school feel small.
Yeah.
And giving students opportunities to demonstrate their talents and succeed. And two ways that we do this are through undergraduate teaching and undergraduate research. We have a large undergraduate teaching program. We have about 300 undergraduate students a year.
Wow.
A semester serve as undergraduate TAs, right? They supervise students in labs. They help with lectures. They grade. They hold office hours. They hold special study sessions. 300 students a year get to do this.
So that's amazing.
It's an amazing thing, right?
Yeah.
So we're talking 1 in 7 undergraduate students is actually participating in the teaching mission for the school. And of course, we honor our very best undergraduate TAs because without them, we wouldn't be able to do what
right.
we do. And that actually has two different benefits, right? So one is for the TAs themselves, mm-hmm. they get an incredible learning opportunity. I love to teach, and I always say that the best way to learn something is to teach it.
Yeah.
And so these students that you know really build up their skills and go out and become incredible graduate students or incredible employees because they really know how to communicate well and how to teach well. But it's not just that. By having so many undergraduates participating in the teaching mission, it means for the other students, the ones who are taking the classes, they get a lot more support, they get a lot more contact, they get a lot more instructional help. And so that helps that large school feel small.
And when you might feel intimidated to approach a professor or faculty member,
that's right.
if it's another undergrad,
that's right.
then
in
you feel...
cases, these are their friends,
yes.
right? They know them. They know how to talk to them. They speak the same language.
Yeah.
I sometimes can't, you know, don't
yes.
understand the latest slang in the window, but the students definitely do. So that's on the teaching side. And on the research side, our undergrads do incredible research, right? We regularly have undergraduates who are first and second authors on research papers that are going out to major conferences, major journals. We regularly have groups of students who participate in vertically integrated projects and do long-term research projects with faculty. We provide a tremendous number of avenues for students to connect with faculty, again, making a large school feel small, and demonstrate what they know on the research side. And so these students then go off and they join graduate school at your MITs, your Stanfords,
yeah.
or they stay with us
right.
and continue to be incredible graduate students.
Absolutely. We talked about improving the student experience, hiring more faculty. We're also improving facilities. We had a ribbon cutting in the fall to celebrate the renovation of the first floor of the Max W. and Maylene Brown Family Hall. It's known as BHEE. How has that added to the faculty and student experience?
Yeah, so BHEE, right, the Brown Hall of Electrical Engineering, is an incredible facility. For any alumni who are listening to this podcast, you almost certainly remember taking classes and doing labs in what at the time was just called the EE building. It's about 100 years old.
Yeah.
And the building was functional, but it was old. The labs were dark.
Yep.
There wasn't, the space wasn't very functional. And thanks to a transformative gift from the Brown family and from a number of other donors that have helped contribute to this, we were able to basically transform the undergraduate educational experience
yeah.
in ECE. We essentially took the first floor of that building and stripped it down to the rafters and rebuilt it.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's an amazing space, brand new labs, much more flexible spaces that we can reconfigure the labs more quickly. There are windows in the lab, so there's
yep.
natural light now. We opened up all of the hallways, so there's more space. It doesn't feel as cramped. Just tons more light flooding through the building. And this has meant several things. One, our labs are brand new. We got some incredible support from companies like Keysight to help outfit these labs with the latest and greatest equipment. So our students are getting state-of-the-art, industry-grade equipment in their labs. There's a lot more common space. One of the things that we experienced in the MSWE building, where we now have a lot of common study spaces, is that this is incredibly useful for our students.
Yeah.
Having this space that students can get together, work together on projects, talk with TAs, and honestly relax
yeah.
can make a big, intimidating school feel more like home.
Absolutely.
And so we opened up a lot of space in the EE building, in BHEE, for exactly that. Right. So there's big study spaces and areas for TAs to provide help. New TA help rooms, new more open offices for our instructional staff so they can interact more with the students. And so that kind of those common areas, I think, have really done a lot to bring together all of the students and faculty and
they're
staff.
Always full.
They're always full.
Yep.
Right. There's always people there working and studying and you know, enjoying each other's company. And then we took our Eta Kappa Nu lounge, and I'll talk more about Eta Kappa Nu in a second, which, you know, they are they're the heartbeat of ECE.
Mm-hmm.
They provide one of the great social experiences in ECE through their lounge, where they provide coffee and donuts and all sorts of other food to our students. And we brought it up to the first floor and essentially made it the gateway to BHEE.
Yes.
As soon as you walk in and walk up the steps, the HKN lounge is right there, ready to offer you a really good coffee for cheaper than Starbucks, which is nice. And really act as a little bit of a social hub for our students and for our faculty and for our staff.
Yeah.
And Eta Kappa Nu, I have to brag about them. It's this old, long-running, nationwide, in fact, international honor society for ECE students. It's run through IEEE. And Purdue actually has the second oldest chapter in the world. It's the beta chapter at Eta Kappa Nu. And I don't think it's that much of a stretch to say it's the best chapter of Eta Kappa Nu. They actually won an outstanding chapter award for the 7th year in a row.
Yep. Yeah.
This year, if you walk into the Eta Kappa Nu lounge, you will see on the walls, it's literally plastered with outstanding chapter plaques because they win it almost every year.
Yep.
In fact, I'd like to joke that they used to actually only give out one of those a year. It was just the best chapter award instead of an outstanding chapter award. And they switched to the outstanding chapter award because they were tired of always giving it to Purdue.
Give other people a chance.
Got to give other people a chance. But those students, it's an honor society. They're some of the best students in our program. But they don't just think of themselves as a bunch of people that are really good at school. They think of themselves as part of the culture of ECE, and it's so incredible.
It's great. And they do a lot of workshops too, like soldering workshops and that kind of thing. So it's a more social environment to get some of the skills
that you need for
class.
So they've done a lot of work in providing supplemental instruction and providing additional skills and really giving our students all of the co-curricular experiences that they need.
I would encourage anybody, any alumni listening and watching, that when you come back to campus, maybe for homecoming, to check out BHEE, because used to walk in and it felt kind of like a time warp. And now it just feels very modern and bright and open. It's kind of a place that you'd be excited to learn in. So it's really great. We mentioned the Purdue Computes Initiative earlier. So that's reshaping how we approach computing research and education. And ECE is right at the forefront of that. Tell me our role and what we're doing for that.
So the university has several pillars that they think of as kind of their primary areas of investment and growth over the next several years. And on the research front, they really have one. They call it Purdue Computes. There's also One Health, which looks at healthcare initiatives. But Purdue Computes has been their long-running research initiative. And within Purdue Computes, they think of four different areas of research. They think of computing research writ large. They think of physical AI, so AI as it touches the real world and as it interacts with the real world. They think of quantum, and they think of semiconductors, right? And if you look at those four things and you think about what electrical and computer engineers do, you realize that you can't do any of those things.
You
can't really advance the research agenda of the university if ECE is not leading the charge.
Correct.
And we've done this in a number of different ways. We've done this through faculty hiring, and I mentioned a bunch of faculty hiring that we've done. But something I do want to point out is that the faculty that we hire and the faculty we are hiring the best of the best. One of our recent hires in the quantum area to support that quantum pillar is Joseph Lukens.
Mm-hmm.
He's actually a Purdue PhD and went off and did amazing things, and we were able to bring him back. And literally 2 weeks after he started at Purdue, he won the Presidential Early Career Award
for
scientists and engineers. This is the highest award that the country gives out to early career engineers. So I think we timed this one right.
Yeah.
We brought him back to Purdue right before he won that award because he is blazing a trail and setting standards for how quantum networking should be done. We think about some of the junior faculty that we've hired in recent years in the computing area, folks like Arvind Machery, who works in computer security research, or Joe Macon, who does computational neuroscience, or Junjie Chin, who thinks about optimization of networks for electric vehicles.
Yep.
And they won career awards in this last year, right? So the NSF Early Career Award, which is, again, the highest award the NSF gives to junior faculty members. And these are people that are really supporting the computing pillar of Purdue Computes. When we think about AI and ML, one of the areas that we're really pushing forward in is chip design.
Yes.
For AI, right? How do you build accelerators? How do you build chips that are energy efficient and can drive the next set of AI technologies? And one of the people leading the charge in this is Anand Raghunathan. He's the co-director of the Institute for Chips and AI, a new research institute that ECE launched just last year, last fall. And Anand Raghunathan won the IEEE McCluskey Award.
Yep.
It's a technical achievement award. It's one of the highest awards that IEEE gives out. And he was awarded for his work on AI accelerators.
Yep.
Right? And then in semiconductors, when we think about what our opportunities are in the semiconductor space, Mark Lundstrom, who is our chief semiconductor officer and happens to be an ECE professor,
yep.
Was elevated to the Academy of... the AAAS, and there's actually two AAAS,
yes.
And I always forget which one it is. He was elevated to the American Academy of Arts and Sciences.
Yes.
It's one of the top honor societies in the country, and he was just elevated to that, right? So we have, and Supriyo Dutta, another one of our faculty members in the semiconductor area, was just elevated to the National Academy of Science this year, right? The highest award that is given to a scientist other than a Nobel Prize. And in fact, he is the only person in the College of Engineering who is a member of both the National Academy of Engineering and the National Academy of Science.
That's amazing.
Vlad Shalayev, who does work in quantum photonics, so sits under both the quantum pillar and the semiconductors pillar, was elevated to the National Academy of Engineering this year.
Yep.
Right. So at, you know, for incoming faculty, junior faculty, mid-career faculty, senior faculty, across all of the areas of Purdue Computes, we are firing on all cylinders. We're bringing in new people. Our existing people are truly excellent. And I think it really just shows that ECE is the foundation that is that sits under everything that the university is trying to do in this space.
And I think it's interesting that it's not just engineering or STEM people. Things like machine learning and AI, those are things that everybody kind of is interested in and understands. I think all of those areas, except maybe quantum, which is still a bit of a mystery, but the other stuff is stuff that everybody's interested in because it's affecting their everyday lives.
Yeah, that's right. Purdue has the Institute for Physical AI, and the idea behind this is that AI is more than just chatbots and large language models, right? AI is transforming how we move and how we grow things and how we build things, how we design things. And Purdue faculty and faculty in ECE are really pushing that forward. It's not just about AI as a fun toy or as a chatbot. It's AI as sort of a truly foundational technology that transforms engineering and transforms science.
I wanted to mention Ed Delp, too, because he's big in image processing and deep fakes and that kind of thing, which I know everybody knows about with the politics in this country. He's going to be next month's guest on this podcast, and so that's going to be a great episode as well.
Yeah, Ed Delp is one of our distinguished professors in ECE. In fact, you know, just to continue the litany of amazing accomplishments of our faculty, he was elevated to the National Academy of Inventors this year.
Yep.
He was named an ACM Fellow this year. For his contributions, and he is one of the world leaders in detecting deepfakes.
Yeah.
Right. So if you've ever been fooled by a video posted on social media, that's not going to last for much longer. Ed's work is going to really help, honestly, the information environment and to make it so that we can really understand the world around us.
And be able to trust what we see.
Exactly.
So we've had a great year. As we look ahead to the next academic year, what are your top priorities?
Yeah, so... You know, we've done a lot of incredible things in this last year, and a lot of this I think we're going to keep pushing forward. I'm really looking forward to continuing to integrate with our Indianapolis campus. We brought in 160 freshmen last year, but freshmen at Purdue go through kind of a common first-year engineering program.
Right.
They were ECE students, but this year they're really going to get to experience ECE courses for the first time.
So right.
I'm really looking forward to how that integration goes. I'm really excited about the new opportunities that we can provide to them. So I think continuing to integrate Indianapolis is a huge effort for this year. Another area that I'm really excited about is we are ramping up our entrepreneurial efforts. We're really thinking about how we can expose our students to entrepreneurship, how we can help them build a network of people that are in that startup and VC space. And so we are going to be launching a course this coming fall, targeted primarily at undergraduate students, but other students will be, you know, graduate students will also be welcome, where we'll bring in external speakers and people from our network, right? Purdue alums, Purdue ECE alums that have gone on to do incredible things in the startup world. These are founders and angel investors and venture capitalists and early stage startup employees. that are going to come back and share their wisdom with our students about what it takes to succeed in that world.
Yeah.
And our students are going to get an opportunity to really learn what it takes to build that entrepreneurial mindset. So I'm really excited about this. There's going to be a lot of opportunity both for sort of focused classes and focused seminars where students can plug into that network, but also seminars of broader interest where basically anybody in the university and honestly anybody on campus can come and hear what it means to take a risk.
Yeah.
And how to avoid being afraid of failure. These are things that you really need in order to have that entrepreneurial mindset. And so I'm really looking forward to building that next generation of ECE entrepreneurs.
Yeah, that sounds exciting.
Of course, I think there's going to be lots and lots of new research opportunities coming, continued investment in semiconductors and quantum. Purdue was announced as the lead workforce partner in the new Digital Twins Initiative.
Yep.
And a lot of Purdue ECE faculty are helping lead that. Purdue landed on a very large DoD project on developing new AI chips, and I'm really looking forward to how that evolves and how that continues to grow. We're continuing to build industry partnerships and thinking about how we can grow our collaborations with key industry partners, folks like TSMC or Synopsys or AMD or Amazon. And I'm really looking forward to how that's going to evolve. And then on the student side, I think there's just going to be a lot of new opportunities for our undergraduate students as we continue to think about how we can invest in student groups and how we can create more spaces and more opportunities for them.
Yep.
to showcase their excellence. I'm always excited about the next edition of the Spark Challenge.
Yes, absolutely.
We'll see if we find another record breaker this year.
That would be great. Every year. Let's just do it every
year.
That's
right, exactly.
So I know that being the head of this huge school, you've got so many things to think about, and maybe it's taken you away from the classroom more than you wish, but what keeps you inspired to keep doing this really hard work?
Yeah. It does take me away from the classroom more than I wish, but actually I got a chance to teach this last semester. I taught advanced C programming, so a nice sophomore nice. Level course.
Yep.
And that, I think, reminded me why the work that we do is so important. That getting a chance to connect with the students and work with the students, that's what inspires me. When I go out and talk about what makes Purdue ECE a special place, it really is the students, right?
Yeah.
I don't think there's any other place where you have this many students who are this excellent. And I am continuously surprised by what they're able to do. I'm continuously awed by the challenges that they set for themselves and then achieve. And I am always, always inspired to be better and to make this department a better place so that we can serve them and so that we can take their ideas and their skills and their talents and send it out to the world, whether that's as an engineer at a Caterpillar or a Boeing, whether that's as a founder of a an innovative startup, or whether that's as a researcher who is going to go and push the frontiers forward in quantum, in semiconductors, in AI and ML, in computing. Our students are why we do what we do.
Yeah.
And they blow me away.
And I mean, if you're considering coming to Purdue ECE, really is a department that really cares about and invests in students. And that's the case for grad students pretty much everywhere, but it's not always the case for undergrad students. It's such a big school, but Purdue ECE really does want to invest and give as many opportunities as possible to the undergrad population
as well.
So thanks so much for joining me today for the State of the School edition of Engineering Innovations. This is going to be an annual thing, so I guess we'll see you next year.
I'm looking forward to it. I think we'll have a lot of other great stories to tell and a lot of great new accomplishments to celebrate.
That's great. So if you enjoyed this episode, be sure to follow us or subscribe to Engineering Innovations wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're part of the Purdue ECE community or thinking about joining it, you can stay connected with us on social media. We're on all the socials and at ece.purdue.edu. So those links will all be in the show notes so you don't have to remember them or rewind and write it down. So thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next month with another new episode of Engineering Innovations.